and welcome to Where the Books Are Now, a podcast about Vermont's public libraries. I'm your host, Nancy Tyczynski, a retired librarian and bookseller. On each episode of Where the Books Are Now, I'll talk with staff from one public library in Vermont about fun and helpful collections and services that you may not know about, a little about the history of the library, and of course, books. Today, we'll be talking with Ian Graham, Library Director at the Rockingham Free Public Library in Bellows Falls Village, Vermont, Sam Howard, the Youth Services Librarian, and Pamela Johnson-Spurlock, the Reference and Historical Collections Librarian. So let's get started. Thank you for taking time with me to talk about your library.
Thank you.
And Ian, would you like to start and tell us a little bit about the history of the Rockingham Library?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I find the history fascinating. This library is one of four Carnegie libraries in the entire state of Vermont. Andrew Carnegie funded the building of more than 2,000 libraries around the world, but only four happen to be in the state of Vermont. It has to do mostly with the size of the population. And, this building was built in 1909 with that funding. And at the time, Bellows Falls was an economic center for New England because of mostly the timber and then paper mills and stuff that was done here. It's the narrowest part of the Connecticut River, so it was a natural place for a timber that was cut north of here to be taken out. And so the richest woman in the world, Hetty Green, lived here at the time. And so it made sense for this very large library to be constructed then. But the library in the town of Rockingham actually dates back 110 years before that to 1799, when the Library Society, Rockingham Library Society, was formed. So there's a long history. You know, that's really not that much after Philadelphia had the first free library, right? And so there's a long history of libraries in this area. This was a very populous area. And so now the town has the benefit of having this Carnegie Library that was constructed 115 years ago, added onto significantly twice, renovated 10 years ago, and in beautiful shape with a 40,000 book collection, lots of electronic resources, a very active youth department, lots of historical materials given the historical nature of the area. And so the history dates way back, and all of that kind of long tail of history helps us where we are now. And the entire region actually benefits from having this grand Carnegie Neo-Gothic library perched on the hill over the Connecticut River. So I think that kind of gets us up to where we are today.
Yes. And if I would encourage anyone, if you're taking a ride up in 91, to just take a little pop off of 91, the library's only 5 minutes or so off of 91, and stop into the library. It's a beautiful library. And when you look out those front windows on the first floor, and full disclosure, I know this because this is my home library. So I'm quite familiar with this library and its beauty and its history. Sam, would you like to talk a little bit about what's going on in the youth services department and some services you have to offer there?
Absolutely. Actually, I've got a big program coming up this morning, our homeschool laboratory. We're going to be making Goldberg machines and doing activities around force and motion. The fun thing about that is that I don't plan it. The families plan the following week, so it's very flexible, responsive to what the kids' interests are in or what they're working on. And that's a big group we pull from both sides of the river, quite a distance from Keene and Springfield, Charlestown, as well as locals.
So there's that. We have multiple story times a week, preschool story time on
Wednesday mornings, and a musical story time for infants and toddlers on Thursdays. We have after-school programming. I go to Central and Saxon's River, where I do a program called Crazy Eights. It's all play-based math games. So, we use glow sticks, but we're learning geometry. Or yesterday we did ninja training, but it was really addition. And so it's really fun.
Awesome.
We have a mad science after school program for the middle schoolers where they come here once a week. And again, like the homeschool laboratory, they get to plan what we do the following week. I was told they were slimed out, but when I asked them what they wanted to do, they want to make slime. So we're doing that again.
We have a playgroup that meets weekly on Friday mornings. This one we do in partnership with the Springfield Area Parent Child Center, Parks Place, and Greater Falls Connections, and the WNESU that offers some support. Friday mornings, 10:30 to 12. It's a lot of fun. We have great families who come. We provide snacks, unstructured play, but really great for the littles to get some more social time. We also partner with Main Street Arts to do a once a month teen program, Outburst Arts, the first Friday of the month at Main Street Arts, starting at 6 o'clock. And the programming is really responsive. So each session we do 7 to 8 weeks, and then I take a break and forget how to do my job and reinvent it when I come back and pick what works, what doesn't work. I'm always interested in hearing what people, kids, teachers, families are interested in. So we can be really flexible per session. We have a big summer reading program. This year, our theme is Adventure Begins at Your Library. Yep. And we've got some really fun things planned for that. Should we talk about eval?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. So we are one of 14 libraries nationally participating in a program called Engaging Beyond Our Walls, which we shortened to eval. It's with Playful City Labs at American University and funded by IMLS. And it's a gamification of our history. So using cell phones and a platform called the Hive platform, start at the library and you just text hello to a number and someone starts texting you to get phone calls and you'll be taken on an interactive walking tour of the history of the village.
I love this.
It's going to be launching really soon. We're in playtest mode right now. And we have a lot of partners. We're working with the Historical Society, Bellows Falls Downtown Development,
the diner, restoration,
the diner, Rockingham for Progress,
train station.
Yep, the train station, the development office. Mm-hmm. So we've got a lot of partners involved in this. So we're really excited about it. And that's going to be running for the next year. And we're going to be adding to it throughout the year. It's editable as well. So look for changes for that.
But that's so much fun. When does that start, Sam?
When I work the bugs out.
We're going to have some, I think some of our volunteers come and kind of be beta testers for us,
right,
to see how it's working. But what's really been great is not just collaborating with these organizations, but it's been taking actual history, primary sources of the history of Bellows Falls and gamifying it and using it to tell some of the history.
I love this.
So it's been great. It's been wonderful collaborating with Sam on that.
Yeah. So lots of things going on.
Yeah.
That is so exciting. I love that. Maybe I can be a beta tester for that.
Yeah.
Since I live nearby.
Come on down.
Okay. And Pamela, what happens in your world in the library?
Well, many different little things. Thanks to a grant that Sam was able to secure for us in the fall, we were able to get this grant through AT&T and the Public Library Association. And we were able to buy a classroom set of laptops for the library so we can offer, computer digital literacy classes to adults or people of all ages. And we're using that to help start what we're calling Tech Time Tuesdays. It's basically every Tuesday at 2 o'clock, love alliteration, don't you? We have tech classes, and it can be either a drop-in class, but like, for instance, today, I will be helping patrons who come in learn how to access our digital resources like Libby and BiblioPlus. In a couple of weeks, I'll be here just solely dedicated to help people put in text forms they need online. But it can be anything from computer basics to how to use Mango languages. I have some programs planned according to the seasons. I'm hoping to do a travel app class closer to the summer. So we have that. Also, I
collaborate with the Historical Society. I go every Wednesday. I'm there from about 1 to 2:30. And I collaborate with them to do historical research, and which can include some genealogy. And speaking of genealogy, we have a genealogist who comes every Thursday from 10:30 to 12:30, Wayne Blanchard. He is phenomenal. That's something we have here every week at the library. And another thing is Sam and I also are available for one-on-one tech support. So if any patron needs extra assistance, not sure what to do, can't make that Tech Time Tuesday, set up an appointment. We're happy to help them. And also, I love doing any type of research. Not just historical research, but research in general. That's one of my,
this is my favorite thing about the job, that and buying books.
That's great. Could you tell me a little bit more? I know that a lot of people are familiar with some of the video streaming services libraries have, mm-hmm. like Canopy and Hoopla, but they is Biblio Plus like that?
Biblio Plus is a type of streaming service just like Canopy. It just depends on what, just like any streaming service. And using your library card and your password, you can access that resource for free.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I just want to, give a quick plug for the Friends of the Library here, which is a very enthusiastic and robust group. And they, the reason I kind of call attention to them now is because they were instrumental in providing us access to Biblio Plus. They supported a majority of it for the first year, at least. And so that allowed us to, that's a significant shift for us to make a move from sort of physical DVDs, which we still buy. But as everybody knows, fewer and fewer titles are actually coming out on DVD because so much gets sort of sucked into the streaming world. And so this is, Biblio Plus is specifically for libraries, funded by the Friends of the Library. And we've watched the number of people using it and stuff, grow steadily over time as people become familiar with it and sort of, understand it's something that they are, is freely available. We have had people sign up for library cards in Rockingham so that they can have access to it.
We encourage
everybody to use it because there's no limits to it other than having a library card. It's no cost, as Pamela said, to any of our patrons.
That's wonderful. Go ahead, Pamela.
Sorry, another thing is Sam and I have also been collaborating on some solar science programming. We tried to offer a day to use some solar telescopes and binoculars, but sadly the weather last month was not on our side. But we have Severa, the Southern Vermont Astronomy Society, coming and giving a lecture this week, this Thursday. And then Sam, you've got a telescope program next week.
It's March. We're going to be doing building telescopes.
Yeah.
We have Bob Pappalardo, who's the project scientist for the Europa mission, coming to do a presentation. Yeah. And this is all leading up to April when we have our and we do have glasses to give away. So far, I think I've gotten all the schools except Saxon River because I forgot to bring them with me yesterday. But we're trying to get glasses out throughout the communities so people can view this. We're going to get near totality. If you're closer to Burlington, you get 100% totality, but it's going to get pretty dark April 8th.
April 8th, yep. Yeah.
So between 2 to 5 is when we'll get the eclipse.
April 8th is the big day that everybody's talking about. I know that the libraries up north are gearing up for a big onslaught of folks to their towns, like all the B&Bs and everything are gearing up. It's going to be quite a big thing in the whole state, but I think especially up north too, where
if you go to Vermont's Agency of Tourism, they've got a whole page dedicated to solar eclipse activities. There's like this place in Burlington, it's having a total eclipse of the heart 80s party.
That's awesome. That's great. So are there any, I also know that the Rockingham Library has a great, has digitized a lot of its historic photographs, and you can access many of those online right through the website. Isn't that right, Pamela?
Yes. So we have our glass negative collection that's available to browse online to see some of our historical photographs of the area. In addition, you can also access some of our historic newspapers. We are working on further digitizing that collection right now. And we also have some more glass negatives that are being digitized currently. So those will be added eventually later this year. And the collection keeps growing, but there's a lot of different online resources available right from the comfort of people's home. You can even look at yearbooks from the Bellows Falls High School. And yeah, it's really wonderful to look and see the path. I showed a patron, actually, his brother, his high school yearbook from 1955 that happened last week. And knowing that he could access that from home anytime just made his day.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Thank you. So making those small impacts every day, that's pretty amazing.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. So those are all fabulous programs and events and things going on inside the library and outside the library, but we can't leave out what's on this takes up a lot of the shelves in the library, right? Or books. So I know that folks always love to hear on podcasts any book recommendations that folks have, and especially from library folks. So do you have any book recommendations that you can would like to throw out there? Anybody?
So I just finished one last night. It actually just won the Newbery. The Eyes and the Impossible by Dave Eggers, who writes both for adults and kids. Animal stories are a thing. Often there's like death involved. They're super twee, but this one is gorgeously written. The language is really great. And it's a sweet, funny, strange little story. But I absolutely recommend it.
Anything by Mark Kalansky. He's like one of my favorite nonfiction authors right now, especially because he covers food history. When it comes to gardening, I love me some Monty Don. And I'm very big on my reference and research books because that's what I do. So yeah, it just depends on what I'm working on is what I'm diving into. But yeah, that's what I've got.
You know, I always tell people when they ask me to recommend books that nobody likes what I like, but that's not always true. So there's enough of a kind of positive feedback loop. But I always recommend Colson Whitehead. He's one of my favorite writers. I discovered him during the pandemic. He's very prolific. I mean, he puts things out quickly, which is nice for people that read like me who read quickly and then want the next one. I have several other people, patrons here, who now keep asking me when his next book is coming out. And I'm not his agent, so I don't know, but hopefully relatively soon. The last one only came out about 4 or 5 months ago, so we have a little bit of time to wait. But also, two other books I've read lately. One is a great book called Yellow Face by R.F. Kuang, which I really enjoyed. I worked in publishing like a lifetime ago, and it's sort of pokes at publishing and pokes at authors and all this kind of stuff. It's both, you know, sort of deep and shallow, and she's a wonderful writer. She's really an excellent writer, so just for the writing alone, it's worth it, but the story itself is good too. And then somebody, a patron came in a couple of years ago, or not quite, maybe a year ago, and recommended this book I'm holding, Island, by Siri Randvahjelm Jacobsen. I'm sure I pronounced most of that wrong, which was originally written in Danish, I think, in 2016, but was translated to English in 2021. So we got it, and it's actually circulated quite a bit, not only because I recommend it repeatedly, but because it's intriguing. It's kind of a small book, but I wanted to just, the first person who rated it, because we do patron reviews optionally in the back of the book, says, gave it a 10 of 10 and said, it's unusual and exquisite, which I think is the perfect brief characterization of it. So one of the things, you know, among all of the James Patterson books and all of the other things that we get all the time, to get a few things in that really kind of are different like that, and then to see people take them out and respond to them, we want to do more of that. So I rely on patrons to tell me those books, since nobody likes what I recommend. So it's kind of a reverse thing. But we're always happy to have patrons near and far bring to our attention titles that they were particularly moved or impressed by or something like that.
And what was the title of that book again, Ian?
It's called Island.
Island. Okay.
Yes. So, and it really is something. It's very interesting.
Great. Wonderful. Well, and I have, before we wrap up, I have just a couple of books that I'm going to recommend quickly to folks. And these are books that don't get, you know, the big bright spotlight shined on them at the time. The first one is The Invisible Husband of Frick Island by Colleen Oakley, which came out in 2021 and takes place in a tiny remote town on an island in Chesapeake Bay. And Piper's the woman who's lived on the island her whole life. She has a great life, all except her husband, who recently died in an accident. But Piper goes along her days as if her husband has not died. And the whole town goes along with her because they love her and they feel very protective of her. And a young journalist arrives on the island to cover the annual cakewalk. And he's not that excited about covering the annual cakewalk because he thinks by now he should be a famous podcaster. And he's always looking for that story. And when he comes upon Piper and the townspeople and seeing how the townspeople are acting with her, he thinks this is his big break. So if you love a small town story with like eccentric characters and the power of community and love, like you like this one. It's quirky and it's lovely and it has just a big, huge heart. And the second book is another quirky book. It's called Interesting Facts About Space by Emily Austin. And this book is about Enid, who works at like a NASA-like agency, and she loves space, has a phobia about bald men, and thinks she's a terrible person. And so this book is really Enid's inner life. That's how you're seeing this book and reading this book. And she's obsessively streams true crime podcasts. She worries a bald man stalking her. She dates a poly couple. She's like very quirky and like utterly lovable. And Emily Austin's previous novel, if you like this kind of quirkiness and just another book with big heart, she wrote Everyone in This Room Will Someday Be Dead in 2021. And that's about Gilda, a 20-something animal-loving lesbian who's also an atheist who can't stop thinking about death. And she sees a flyer for a free therapy group because she's out of work and struggling. And the free therapy group is at the local Catholic church. And she brings the flyer in, and old Father Jeff comes out and thinks that Gilda's there to apply for the receptionist job, because their beloved receptionist, Grace, had recently passed away. So Gilda doesn't have a job. She figures, why not? Father Jeff hires her. And then, you know, as she's getting into the job, she's like trying to learn the Catholic Mass. She thinks that's really kind of funny and weird. And she's notices an email while she's doing a receptionist job from a friend of Grace's, and she can't bring herself to tell the friend the bad news about Grace. So she answers the email as if she were Grace. And of course, this kind of takes on a life of its own. And then things get a little rambunctious when the police get involved, because they think that Grace's death may not have been an accident after all. So they're two very quirky books, but fun to read, quick reads, you know, if you want something that's quirky, you know, not too quirky, and just with really big hearts. Both of these books have really big hearts. So any last words from anyone, anything, what should people stop by and see or look at if they come into the beautiful Rockingham Library? What are some important places to go inside the library?
So we try to display artwork by local artists pretty much in an ongoing basis. And we're trying to establish a calendar by which we can kind of assure that will happen. So there's artwork on the wall right now. And previously there was a exhibition installed by the Saxton's River Artists Guild. And so we have a lot, it's a big building with a lot of wall space. And so we really, in addition to the photographs and artwork that we have in a sort of, you know, owned by the library in a permanent display, it's really nice to showcase local artists and stuff like that. And so that's something that people come in specifically to do. Also, people come in specifically just to wander around the building, because it is a grand, important, interesting building with stunning views, and, you know, is a lot of fun. I want to make a little plug for the top floor, which is a large meeting space that is being used more and more coming, thankfully, out of the pandemic. And it's a really neat space in and of itself, but also that the people in town are recognizing it as a very valuable location to hold large meetings and stuff like that. And so there's been some meet and greets that different town organizations have held up there, as well as some events around the refurbishing and renovation of the diner, which is an important town effort, Rockingham for Progress running that. And so, you know, I think, and you know, the youth department in this building, I don't want to take away from what Sam would probably say, is really, really large and robust and has an amazing collection that's refreshed all the time. And it's a beautiful space, similarly with artwork and everything. So the whole building is worth seeing, you know, given its grandeur and its kind of, clear historical value and importance and stuff. But I'm sure you have other things that.
Yep, you can take, right?
Oh, it's time for the public.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Ian, Pamela, and Sam for chatting with me today. And library friends, you can find out more about the Rockingham Library by visiting their website at rockinghamlibrary.org or taking a drive up and stopping to say hi. Information about this episode, including all the books we talked about and how to get your favorite Vermont library on the show, will be in the show notes blog at wherethebooksarenow.com. Please visit us on our Facebook page to get more public library tidbits. And that's all for today. Thank you for spending time with us, and please explore public libraries in person or virtually. You'll be surprised and delighted at what you find.
Thank you.
Thank you.